Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of In the Garden on KFSK. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. On this show, we dig our hands in the dirt, get back to nature, and find that special place of abundance and beauty. Today, I have an idea I want to share with you, a little seed I'd like to plant in your thoughts. There's a place right here in town that I think would be great for something called garden allotments. It's a kind of community garden. I probably don't need to tell you about the oil price spikes and supply chain disruptions going off around the world right now, the potential for fertilizer shortages and then later food shortages. People in Europe, Asia, and Africa are feeling the situation a little more than us here in the USA. There's already fuel rationing and disaster declarations in some places like the Philippines. There are a lot of storm clouds on the economic and geopolitical horizon. But there's also a lot we can do right here and now to make our community more resilient in the face of all this. I don't want to sow panic, but rather to encourage long-term strategic thinking. So, what are allotments? They're small garden plots of a few thousand square feet in size, up to a quarter acre in some places, depending on the location and circumstances, rented or leased out to individuals and families who want to garden at generally a very modest and affordable price that allows almost anyone to have one. You've probably heard of Victory Gardens. Allotments are in many cases synonymous. You know, the Victory Gardens came in with the Second World War era in the US and the UK. But in many parts of Europe, there already were allotments for a long time, back in the 1700s, 1800s. Beginning with the era of the Industrial Revolution, lots of people migrating to cities, urbanization, you know, these working class folks wanted a way to maintain their connection to the land and have a place where they could grow some food even when they started living in more densely populated urban areas. And so some forward-thinking individuals in various parts of Europe decided that they should set up these garden allotment areas where someone could rent or lease, you know, have secure tenure on a very small plot of land, but enough for a meaningful family garden. And they sprang up all over Northern Europe, and they've been going continuously ever since then. And, you know, all over the world, you can see throughout history in times of disruption and war and chaos, you know, people turn to gardening as a way to have something to eat. About 14 years ago, I was traveling in Sierra Leone, and I saw small gardens all over in the capital city of Freetown, basically any open space between some houses. Somebody had a garden, you know, and they were growing rows of vegetables and fruit trees and things like that. And people there told me that during the 10 years of civil war that they endured in the 90s and early 2000s, the roads from the hinterlands into the city were frequently too dangerous to travel. And, you know, Freetown is a city of over a million people. So being cut off from their rural food sources, the farms and things like that, was really, really problematic. And people took to gardening so they'd have something to eat. So allotments in particular are an approach to community gardening where each individual or each family gets to have their own little plot, and they're responsible for it. They get to decide what they can grow there, you know, and there are various limitations on what you can do with the land. You know, in many places, people end up putting up sheds or in some cases, even like little cottages on their garden plots, depending on where they are, because in many parts of Europe, it may be, you know, their only access to open space and to nature, really. You know, in the Soviet Union for a time, the rural garden allotments were basically the only legal form of investment or land ownership that was available to the ordinary middle class folks. So they became very important in that way. But basically it's just a little piece of land, in some area that's accessible to a lot of people. And then it's divided up into these little plots that everyone, can have a chance to use. And so it's managed in different ways, in different places. In Denmark and the other Scandinavian countries, they usually have, an independent allotment association, that's just kind of a citizens association that rents the land from the municipality, in bulk, you might say, and then the individual gardeners rent from that association, at a very reasonable rate, and they have meetings and kind of decide what the rules are and how they're going to manage the area as a whole. And in the UK, by contrast, the municipality itself takes that on, managing the allotments and renting or leasing them out to individuals. So, in that situation, the municipality is taking on a little bit more of that work of managing the gardens. And they, in the UK, that's governed under the Allotments Act, of which the latest version was passed in 1950, I believe. So there's a lot of different approaches, a lot of different case studies to look at, but I think, here in Petersburg, we need to maximize growing space because that's what we're really limited by. Arable land is almost non-existent here. And it's a real limiting factor for people trying to grow things. And we have a history of some very productive food gardens around town. Nancy Zeich, has told me that, their property was formerly owned by a Filipino guy who, cultivated a very lush vegetable garden for many years, built up some really rich soil. It was a great boon to her and Don when they bought the place because they had this wonderful soil that had been fertilized over years and years. And he grew massive amounts of, I think she said, rhubarb and probably lots of other things. And I think maybe she said he was selling produce. I can't remember for sure. But people have done a lot of gardening here in the past. But, you know, here in Petersburg, even if you have your own home with a private yard, you're probably dealing with mucky, soggy peat soil that used to be straight up muskeg, or maybe still is pretty much muskeg. Might also be shaded by tall trees, or nearby buildings, or maybe you have big rocks in the ground. Maybe you've already maxed out your little space, with garden and you're just chomping at the bit to grow more. So imagine if you could start your garden in a perfectly flat place with full sun all day, well-drained sandy subsoil, and other gardeners all around to share tips and swap plants with. Wouldn't that be neat? So I want you to think about the ball fields. There's lots of potential there. It's flat, sandy, well-drained, full sun, centrally located. Now, I have nothing against baseball. I know people have had a lot of really great times there. I know it's very significant to our culture. Baseball's awesome. I played baseball as a kid. It's really fun. But I just want you to think in kind of a strategic way about things we see going on in the world and price increases and you know, how can we make our community more resilient? Not out of panic, but out of a desire to build something in the long term. And this wouldn't have to be, all or nothing. You know, you could take one of those fields, one of those back smaller fields, as kind of a test case. All the fields are already fenced off. There's sheds there, storage, there's bathrooms and water. You know, it's kind of like all perfectly set up already. So I've looked at that area. The smaller two fields are each around 43,000 square feet or just about an acre. Each of those could be divided into about 20 plots of around 2,000 square feet. That's close to the average size. If you look at allotment gardens in, say, Britain, you know, they're generally 2,000 to 3,000 square feet. somewhere in that neighborhood. So similar footprint to like a good sized house, if you're trying to imagine that. You know, plenty of room to grow, but not so much that you're going to be wasting space for an individual gardener. So you could get about 20 plots like that into one of those backfields. You know, could be an interesting way to start as a pilot project. Those larger fields are a little under 70,000 square feet. And you could get about 35 plots into each of those, just dividing it up on a grid pattern. You know, and all those peripheral areas, could be planted with, berry bushes and fruit trees and made use of in other ways too. There's a lot of open ground there that has good drainage, full sun. A lot of potential in that site. There could be some kind of shared composting area centrally located, fenced off from bears. Something could be done for that, bringing in some truckloads of peat. So, you know, it's all flat sand there right now where they play ball games. And because we get so much rain here, you don't need the sand. The drainage is really the main thing. And then you can add organic matter on top of that, a couple inches of, good compost over that sand, and you could grow all kinds of stuff. You know, we've got truckloads of peat that get taken up to the borough mud dump, whenever there's excavation, like for the new hospital or the Hammer and Weekon expansion. I mean, just like tons and tons and tons of peat get hauled off. You know, that's a decent organic matter to start with. It's somewhat acidic. It's not ideal, but, you know, you can build up the soil with it, and then adding lime, adding seaweed, fish waste, you know, we have no shortage of potential sources of fertilizer. And I know for a fact that with some hard work, forethought, and cooperation, Petersburg folks could grow thousands of pounds of potatoes, carrots, cabbages, beets, turnips, kale, garlic, and more in those ball fields. We've got the mother load of proteins and fats swimming around and scuttling around in our cold Alaskan waters. But there are no carbohydrates in the ocean, no starches or sugars in the sea in any significant sense. So if we want to be resilient to potential supply chain disruptions and grocery shortages, we need to get gardening. And just as an aside, I've done low-carb, keto, carnivore diets off and on. They can be great in the short term, but carbs are actually really important for long-term metabolic health. And Tlingit people traditionally went to great lengths to pick and store berries and roots for the winter. And as soon as potatoes and other root crops arrived with the Russians, they started growing them in beachside gardens, fertilized with seaweed. It was already an important thing. That's something John Muir comments on in his travels in Alaska, even when they were up in Glacier Bay, I think. You know, people up there had turnips and potatoes and stuff that they were growing, and those root crops can be really important in a climate like this. So some practical points on how it could work. You know, if there was an independent allotment association formed, now that would take some volunteer effort, some folks that have the time and the energy and the interest. If they're out there, just keep that in mind. That would make it simpler for the borough to have a single entity for them to deal with, who would then administer the leases out to the individual gardeners, and lay out the ground rules for using them. That's probably a good way to go, but there are many options. There's a lot of case studies to look at across Germany, France, Russia, the UK, the Scandinavian countries, for how that could be handled. There are certainly problems that can arise. You know, how do you handle somebody leaving behind a big mess like a collapsed greenhouse? You know, do you allow greenhouses to be put up? Most allotments, I think they do. Small structures, greenhouses, cloches, cold frames, things like that. You know, keeping dogs out is definitely an issue. Dogs can do a lot of damage in a garden, as I know very well. Children running amok on other people's crops, if they're not behaving themselves, personal responsibility is required, just like in the rest of our lives. But, you know, I mean, those ball fields already chain link fence all around them, little gate and, you know, dogs could be kept out. So this is just an idea. I'm just floating this out there. But bear in mind, there are many other potential benefits to these kind of allotment gardens. They foster connections and cooperation among townsfolk, experiential learning and play with plants and nature for kids, purposeful, productive activity for those who are unemployed or underemployed, great way for older folks to get out, share their knowledge. Many of our older residents here in Petersburg are incredibly knowledgeable about gardening. Great way for older folks to share what they know and connect with others, and just for people to get together in general around fun, meaningful outdoor activity, and good food. And, you know, potential for sharing tools, sharing knowledge. Somebody's got a rototiller, you know, could be jointly operated. So a resource I want to share with you, if this interests you, there's a really great website, www.allotment-garden.org. That's allotment-garden.org. And this is put together by a guy in the UK. It's a treasure trove of pictures and articles and all kinds of educational resources on how and why to grow food in an allotment plot, in the UK, which is a fairly similar climate to here. I don't remember which part of the UK he's in exactly, but, you know, up here we're pretty similar to the Scottish Highlands. And then as you go south in the UK, it gets closer to Washington, Seattle area, but it's all that kind of cool maritime climate, you know, generally cool summers, mild winters, damp most of the time. So a lot of similarities for us. And so this website, allotmentgarden.org, is put together by a guy named John Harrison. And he takes you through his own journey from starting out with a square of bare dirt in his allotment, and over the course of years, transforming it into a booming production garden that just pumps out huge nutrient-dense vegetables and also provides a whole world of connections to other people who love to grow and eat good things. In case you haven't heard me say this before, the Brits are just nuts about their gardens. And that's a good thing. There's a lot we can learn from them. One of the things I really loved on this website, he's got a special article on growing vegetables for competitions. They have judged produce vegetable growing competitions there in the UK. I think there's some around in the US too. But just seeing people, you know, with their, like, you wouldn't believe these kind of vegetables. Like, there's a photo of this guy holding carrots that are like 3 feet long. I'm not kidding. It's incredible. Really, really inspiring. And I know that our Alaskan gardeners could give them some stiff competition with our long summer daylight hours and the mountains of seaweed and fish waste we have at hand. We could definitely give them a run for their money on those giant vegetables. And the website has a chat and help forum as well. So definitely check it out. www.allotment-garden.org. You know, and he's, they're talking about same things that are going on in the world. You know, issues with price spikes and fuel shortages, and, they're not seeing a lot of encouraging leadership from their government. And, I'll tell you what, those Brits are not wasting any time, getting to work in their gardens. So I hope this is all food for thought, no pun intended. It's all speculation on my part about turning a public space like the ball fields into an allotment garden. But everything starts with an idea. I know there are other gardeners out there in Petersburg, folks that are concerned about the rising cost of food, as well as the declining quality of it, of what turns up in our supermarkets, what is produced by large commercial farms, and what we can do in these chaotic times. So the bottom line is gardening is one of the most healthful and rejuvenating things we can do, not just for our bodies, but especially for our minds and our souls. And especially in a time when it feels like the world is careening toward the brink of disaster, it's a way to take charge of your life and create positive change in a very real way alongside friends, neighbors, and kin who feel the same way. And I'm not trying to sow panic about the world situation. I want to encourage people to think about long-term strategic ways to make our community more resilient. So think about it. And that's all for today. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll see you next week here on In the Garden.